welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio Houston with our hosts from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Woo!
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
How are you doing today, Mandy?
I am great. It's December. Things are going well.
Yeah, yeah.
I cannot believe that Christmas is right around the corner.
How's your holiday shopping going, by the way?
Started it this weekend.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit stressful. I don't like to, like, wait till the last minute. Not that I, like, do it all year long or do it at Thanksgiving. I just needed to organize a little bit. But what's great about 2018 is that you can go click, click, and the magic starts happening. Mm. So, pulling it together. How about you?
Good. You know, I'm looking forward to a lot of the holiday parties that are going
mm-hmm.
on. We have the big Children at Risk holiday bash coming up.
Yes, we do.
And it's just sort of a festive time of year, right?
It is.
So I always enjoy it.
And the kids are so excited, and they're kind of on the countdown for their school. No more school for a big break. 2 weeks off. It'll be fun.
And my daughter will be coming back from New York City.
Nice.
So it should be really
good.
We
just saw her.
I know, but
it's
still.
You're getting spoiled.
I am absolutely spoiled. I'm a spoiled man in general, right? So, but here on the Growing Up in America show, you know, I do want to remind people, Christmas Eve, the 24th, we're going to have our holiday spectacular
mm-hmm.
where we share our favorite Christmas songs with people and
then, memories.
And then the week after that is our regular prediction show. We get to do predictions for the coming year.
I think that's your favorite.
I love the prediction show, right?
I know. So. You like the holiday spectacular as well.
I
so do I. I'm right there
the
with
specials.
You.
I love the specials. So, but we have a good show today.
We do.
Our date ahead today, we're going to start off with Patrick Gill. He is the assistant director for the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation. The number today, Mandy, 2020. Sounds like a year in the future.
I could guess that would be a year, 2020.
Or maybe
2020.
Something to do with vision.
I don't know.
Maybe, right? Vision?
Very nice. Mm-hmm. And after Date Ahead, we'll have Chanel Brown, who's one of Children at Risk's AmeriCorps Vistas. And she'll be joining us to give updates on their work surrounding Hurricane Harvey recovery.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be then taking a trip to Pasadena ISD. We have Principal Joseph Adra, Assistant Principal Steve Martin. They're going to be talking about their efforts to register of age students. So I guess
That's
this is voting, registering to vote.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to hear it. There's pushback from some folks saying, you know, what is the role of a school or not? So I'm excited to talk to them.
We're going to talk to Joe and Steve
registered.
About that, right?
And then today on our social conscience scale, so are we not having it or we are having it?
We're gonna thumbs up, thumbs down on good toys, I guess.
We'll be talking to Vanessa Wodehouse, the owner of Big Blue Whale in the Heights, and she'll be talking about the popular toys for this Christmas. And Big Blue Whale, say that three times really fast.
Big Blue
also
Whale
also has
Big Blue
a
Whale,
new
Blue Whale.
Approach to toy shopping. So we'll see what Vanessa Wodehouse has to say.
Yeah, I want
to
know the hot toys, the toys not to get. And this is where I'm going to encourage people to call in. Toys not to get, toys to get. Like favorite toys, not favorite. So thumbs up, thumbs down on toys. That's what we're going to do. I mean, obviously we're thumbs up on toys, but I want people to call in with their own thumbs up and thumbs down on specific types of toys.
Okay.
So it sound good to you?
So we're not saying what the toy is. It's just...
Oh, yeah. People can say what the toy is.
No, you and I are not.
We are
but
not.
But people
no.
should call in and vocalize, hey, this is a great toy for kids, or this is terrible. Stay away.
Exactly.
All
that's
right.
what. I, and
that's
then
fun.
Vanessa's going to help us. She's our resident expert on toys. Though I don't think we had her last year, but we had her the year before. She's fantastic. And then our final guest for the day is our good buddy, Brian Green from the Houston Food Bank,
mm-hmm.
giving us an update on food and the holidays and what's going on. He's also going to be a guest on the Holiday Spectacular. How often do we have? We have Brian on a lot, don't we?
We do.
Because he's so good.
He is so good. And the Houston Food Bank does so much for our community. And I know that there's a lot of people who decide to spend their time volunteering at the food bank
mm-hmm.
this time of year. So
yeah, yeah.
We'll get some updates from him.
So it should be a good program. Welcome to Growing Up in America, KPFT, Houston Pacifica Radio. This is a discussion, as always, on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. Mandy, how do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of every single one of our children?
We could do better.
We could do way, way better, and that's what we're here to talk about. So you ready for a little date ahead?
Let's do it.
us is our good buddy Patrick Gill. And
Patrick
he's the assistant director of the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation. Patrick, it's freezing in the studio, so Mandy and I are like dancing. We're just trying to stay
we're
warm.
We're standing, grooving.
Yeah. So
for the date ahead, for the number, we announced that it was 2020, and so we're trying to figure out, is it the year or is it the vision, 2020 vision?
Or is it any of that?
Or not at all?
It's the year, a thing associated with the year. I wanted to talk to you guys about the 2020 census.
Oh, the 2020 census. Okay. Oh, that makes sense, right? Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that.
So there's been some pretty well-publicized news about the 2020 census related to the potential probable addition of a question asking respondents about citizenship status.
Yeah.
That's been covered in a lot of places. What I wanted to talk to you guys about was something that was in the news a little bit last week, but I think got buried as things are wont to do in our current environment. And it's related to privacy concerns about the 2020 census, or changes to privacy guidelines for the release of census data after the 2020 census is conducted.
And so my understanding is that they're just trying to make it more difficult, right, to collect that information, or that they won't release it. Are they not asking the questions because it's a privacy issue, or they'll ask the questions and then just not release it? What's the proposal there?
Yeah.
So they're going to – that's a good question. They're going to be collecting all the same data they've always collected. There are concerns that the Census Bureau's privacy rules are out of date because they were just, you know, decades ago when technology and computing abilities weren't what they are. And so there are concerns that it's too easy to take the data that the census releases and reconstruct it and make individual level data. So like Mandy, the responses you give to the census when you fill it out are matched. Nobody can trace it back to you, Mandy Kimball. But you are an individual, like your responses are there as an individual person. It's just not tied to you. There are concerns among privacy advocates that it's too easy now for somebody to go back and find your individual line of data and to tie it back to you.
And track it back or figure it out. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So where's the balance here, right? Because I feel like it also could just be a message that one, in regards to census and getting people who are legal or undocumented information. And then now it's like, let's collect this information, but we're not going to release it. I thought we were supposed to be about transparency, right? And accountability. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seems like we're going in the opposite direction.
There's a couple of issues here though, right, Patrick? I think that we're talking about this issue of, it's easier to track what's happening with the data issue, but then Mandy's bringing up this very good issue of, are we even indeed tracking everyone who's in our country? Are we indeed tracking every citizen of our country? And is there, I mean, it seems like we're setting up the census is going to be a failure no matter what, any way you look at it, in many ways.
Yeah, so there are a couple things there. Before I tackle the are we tracking everybody, the big change that the Census Bureau is proposing would essentially eliminate the release of what's called microdata, mm-hmm. which is just a sample of the census data that we use at Children at Risk every day to construct a lot of the analyses we do. We use the census microdata throughout our Kellogg report on early childhood education that just got released. We use that extensively, and the new privacy rules the census is proposing would basically ban the release of microdata. A lot of the analysis we did for that report would no longer be possible. So I think, Mandy, when you brought up what's the balance? I think the privacy concerns are legitimate, but I think this proposal is kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater, and we got to figure out what that middle ground is.
Is it all about privacy, or is there something else that we're trying to hide by doing this?
Unclear. All the stated justifications have been about privacy, and I will say that they were studying this change before the Trump administration came into office.
Okay.
So this predates the current administration.
Right.
Well, and I will give it that we probably should update it if it's been like way before technology, right? But technology is supposed to provide us advances and what we can do, and it shouldn't be an excuse to limit. So it's really interesting because we want to know what's going on in our communities.
Right.
In our last minute,
and it does raise.
In our last minute that we have with you, Patrick, and maybe this is absolutely something we should be talking about a lot more, but it does seem that the state of Texas is not really bending over backwards to help the U.S. Department of Census in terms of counting everyone in our state. Sometimes it seems to me, it doesn't seem to me, it is short-sighted on the part of our state to not want to count every single person in our state because it means a loss of federal dollars. But we don't seem to be sort of making this easy on ourselves.
No, it's going to be particularly, if the predictions about undercounts come to pass, it's going to be particularly damaging to urban areas. So those, you know, cities like Houston and San Antonio and Dallas are going to be on their own and trying to make sure that their citizens are accurately counted. Because the state, you know, there's a vested interest in maybe weighting the people that are counted in certain areas more heavily than others. And so that's the kind of calculations that people are doing right now when they're looking at this citizenship question in particular.
So it's going to be up at the local levels, right? So the state, maybe not, but Houston is invested in this issue, and hopefully Dallas, San Antonio,
they have
other
to be
cities.
Because they're not getting the help from the state that other cities
and
are getting from their own
the
states,
local,
right?
Yeah.
So, but I feel like we're going to have to do a lot more to make sure that this happens. And you know, we've been having these national conversations, Mandy, about how do we make sure that there's no undercount nationally, and people are very worried about places like Texas and the Valley. You know, the Valley municipalities don't have the ability to invest in this that maybe Houston or Dallas does.
Right.
And so we're going to see a lot of work that needs to be done. Patrick Gill is the Assistant Director for the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation over at Children at Risk. Patrick, thank you for what you do. Thanks for being on Growing Up in America today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT 90.1.
Yeah.
So, Pacifica Radio. Mandy, you doing okay today? We're still freezing in the studio, right?
I'm actually okay.
You're good now that you have your winter coat on?
That's right. I'm okay.
Very good. Are you ready for a little Chanel Brown?
You know it.
I love this music.
Me too.
Chanel,
this is where we need a camera. We can jam pretty good.
Chanel, did you pick this song?
I did. Jackson 5.
I love the Jackson 5. So that was
they're great.
Yeah,
happy Monday.
Yeah, happy Monday, Chanel.
Happy Monday, y'all.
So you've been really busy with a team of other American Corps Vistas working on Hurricane Harvey. We greatly appreciate your updates. And particularly right now, I feel like sometimes people don't really have a Hurricane Harvey recovery on their mind. But we know, as many of us are getting ready for the holidays and putting up the tree, that there are still several families and communities without. What do you see that's going on right now in the Houston area as far as recovery and the need?
Yeah, what's the big takeaway right now, Chanel?
I think still the big takeaway is just, I really think it's housing. I really think it's trying to rebuild those homes that are, you know, still trying to recover and still trying to process and pick up the pieces. There are a lot of people, especially like nonprofits, that are taking on this heavy load and are trying to get people in their homes and trying to get people back into their daily and normal routines. There's still a long way to go, and we still have there's still much to do in terms of housing.
And I think you and I talked about this a little bit, Chanel, but, you know, the federal government has been putting a little bit of extra money into Houston. They've been sending money. And I've heard a number of stories about this. Is it enough money? Is it not enough money? How is Houston feeling about the federal response to Hurricane Harvey at this point?
I think Houston does appreciate the federal response. I think it appreciates the fact that, you know, they still acknowledge that recovery still needs to happen. However, I think the city does feel that the federal government could do better or could have more of a presence, because, you know, they see or they hear about these stories and they hear about how money is coming in and they hear about all this type of funding, but they still don't see much results. They still see desolate houses. They still are seeing schools that are trying to rebuild and trying to regroup. So I do think that while the federal government assistance is much appreciated, there still could be plenty more to do.
Chanel, you might not know the answer to this right now, but maybe at the beginning of the year, we were talking about how 2018 is wrapping up and soon we're going to have our prediction show. But what is the goal for Hurricane Harvey recovery in 2019? So Texas, Houston was waiting a long time for federal dollars. We're starting to get them. What are the goals and strategies to improve the recovery for the families who are still struggling right now? Are there conversations and goal strategies that have been put out?
There have definitely been conversations as far as like how can we help those particularly in low-income areas, how we can help them recover and how we can help them just get back into their routine. I'm not sure about the specific strategies and end goals, but there are conversations and there are talks as to how we can, you know, move this along and how we can get them into their adequate housing and not only adequate but also resilient housing as well.
I think that would be great information if you can get it in the future to share back, because part of it is it might be a goal or a strategy. It might be a stretch, right? But the more information that the community knows, the more we can hold people accountable for those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chanel, I wanted to ask you one last question. Final question, and this might be a hard question, but I just want to know what you're hearing around this. Is that, you know, the current county judge, the outgoing county judge, was someone who was really engaged, right, in sort of Hurricane Harvey recovery. When you're amongst your buddies and all the groups that are doing resiliency and recovery around children and families and homes, are people worried at all about a change at the county judge level and what that's going to mean for hurricane recovery? Are people just sort of taking it in stride? Or are people even talking about it at all?
Yeah, I haven't heard much talk about it. I mean, there could definitely be conversations. I'm sure people are having conversations about it, especially with this last round of funding that came in for the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund.
Right.
Giving out, you know, $3 million. This last round gave out $3 million to 17 nonprofits. So, I mean, I'm sure there's been conversations about it, but I particularly haven't heard anything.
Yeah. Well, I think it's sort of an interesting deal.
I'm very interested to see how this goes, especially with the new legislative session coming around the corner.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. Yeah. All right. Chanel Brown is one of the AmeriCorps Vistas working on Hurricane Harvey recovery over at Children at Risk. And thanks for what you're doing, Chanel, and thanks for being on the Growing Up in America program.
Yeah, thank you all so much for having me.
All righty. Take
care. Bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. I'm ready to talk a little bit about voter registration. But I'm not going to stop believing, Mandy.
Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling. Feel like
deeper. All right, on the line with us is
Great song.
Dr. Steve Martin, who's the assistant principal over at Pasadena ISD, along with Principal Joe Saavedra. Steve and Joe, how are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
We're doing great, and especially with that song to get us pumped up.
Yeah!
Loved it.
Monday!
That was awesome.
Well, we don't want you guys to stop. So I'm real excited.
I'm really excited.
Mandy and I are both real excited about this idea about registering students in school. You know, we saw a lot of people come out to vote during this last election, more young people than in a very long time in Texas. But still, when we look across the spectrum, across the country, Texas still doesn't have enough kids voting, enough young people voting. Are you guys hoping to sort of begin and in a small part sort of turn that tide?
Well, I think it's like anything else. I think we have a responsibility Not only is that a state expectation that we provide opportunities for kids to learn about voter registration and get registered, but it is a responsibility. So I know for us, we've been able to work with a community organization called Neighborhood Centers. Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with them
or not,
but
absolutely.
they serve the Pasadena area and the greater Houston area. But we've been able to work with them and partner with them, and they've come here, work with our staff. They've actually gone into classrooms to talk to the kids about the importance of getting registered to vote.
Excellent.
And then provide an opportunity for them to register. And so they are deputized, I guess, personnel that can collect the registrar card. And so we've been able to do some of that. And then we still do some of the things at many other schools, which are the voting drives during lunches and after school and that sort of thing. But I think for us, one of the things that worked very well was partnering up with Neighborhood Centers for sure.
So it sounds like that's the key is partnerships, because I remember right before the elections, there was a lot of conversations and a push for the public schools to get those kids registered to vote. And I think it was the legislature.
It's an old time law. It's the law already in the state of Texas that schools are supposed to help kids register. But there was a pushback from the legislature saying, don't do that.
That
right?
You can't, and that you cannot spend your public dollars, because I think it had something to do with buses. And I just remember
but then the pushback
pastors
was
for change
like,
was like, we'll
law.
Come over and bus. Yeah. So what kind of conversations are you having, and particularly as you do this, are school districts reaching out to ask how it's going? Is this something that we're going to see more in the future?
So what I can tell you just from our experience, I know that this is something that at the district level, we have regular meetings to talk about a variety of topics, and this is one of them that came up in terms of being passed down from the Attorney General's office down, letters that go out to the superintendents of, hey, make sure you guys are doing this. And so that gets communicated to us, very similar to an ASVAB. We're required to provide opportunities for taking ASVAB, and so it's just providing that opportunity. We don't get a lot of clear direction on how to do that necessarily, but it's up to us to look at it and do it in an appropriate way that's nonpartisan. So for us, it became very important to find a community organization that is nonpartisan and come in here and keep it to just the facts of the importance of getting involved. And not leaning in any one way or another. If anything, I met with those folks that were going to do the presentations, and that's one of the things that we made clear. We got to make sure that it's nonpartisan, but we just stick to this
right.
topic of it's important to get involved, and here's why you need to get involved, and here's an opportunity in which you can get registered to vote.
We're talking with Principal Joseph Adra and Assistant Principal Dr. Steve Martin from Pasadena ISD. Hey, guys, when you guys register students, are you seeing, you know, what percentage of your of age students, kids that are turning 18, what percentage of them are indeed registering? And then what percentage do you think of those that register are indeed voting? I mean, what are you seeing in your schools?
Well, sir, we don't really have any formal data kind of collected along that line, but I can tell you just through my informal conversations with the students that this last election was a reflection basically of not only what was happening in America, it was also happening on our campus.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, our students need to be of age to be able to vote, and that you're talking about usually just seniors, it's a certain percentage of that as well. But I really do think that the mindset and the culture that we kind of really enfold here in the students and what we've tried to really make become part of who they are, their moral fiber is, you are responsible for your community. Everything that you do, everything you learn, your knowledge and skills here is going to be a benefit to your family and to your neighbors and to your community, not just within the walls of Pasadena High School. And so that's why we're really big on, you know, going out and volunteering, being a well-rounded student, not just, you know, excelling in academics, but also excelling in helping your brother, your sister, and in helping community members. So I think that that really kind of segues into them wanting to be responsible in voting and in being responsible for their community by voting and by making sure that they're doing what they can do to do their part to make their community a great place to live.
I know that you are not asking them specifically or talking to them about particular issues, but I would assume the more empowered and equipped these students feel, probably the more vocal they will get. So have you heard some of the issues that the students are interested in as you hear conversations in the the hall or outside of the school that they want to change?
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're interested in definitely local things. They're interested in, in anything that is probably propagated on the media that's highlighted. I think that with this last election, goodness, we were seeing so much from all the candidates. And so, you'll see the kids walking around with their stickers for certain candidates or for certain issues on their backpacks and things like that.
That's great.
So to me, it was really kind of cool to see how, our students are definitely reflective of the culture, and what's important to the culture is important to them.
And I think our role becomes, as they share some of their own personal views and all that, I mean, we have to be very careful, but I think our role is to encourage them to get very well informed, know the issues, know the research behind it, find out what every candidate stands for, and really be well informed and educated before they go out and cast a vote. It's very easy for, just in general, I think we see that in politics now, that we're straight ticket, party voting, and so how do you go beyond that and really get to know the candidates and the issues and really make an informed decision? And I think that's what our conversations are in the classrooms, government and history classes, these are perfect, great times in America where our teachers get a chance to take opportunities of teaching and really encouraging them, but you got to do your research. Don't just vote on something because somebody told you, but research and find out what the impact it will have on you and your family, your community, before you go out there and cast your vote in the future.
I remember in high school, though, my government teacher, I guess, I can't remember what it would have been my senior year, but how enthusiastic he was about voting and the importance of voting, but really getting you engaged in terms of, as you're saying, some of these local issues and other issues and how it had an impact on you. And to this day, I really give a lot of credit. I think growing up in Puerto Rico and it being very political there probably gives more credit in terms of my engagement in politics. But that high school teacher certainly did a lot. So I understand what you guys are doing. I wanted to ask Principal Saavedra, I wanted to know, I was talking with the head of Univision the other day, and he was talking about the need for more Latinos to be registered and engaged. As you register students, is there, do you see sort of a wariness or an unwillingness on the part of Latinos to register because of maybe an uncle or a brother-in-law who may be undocumented? Are we seeing some of that in our community?
I can only speak for, again, the experience here in the classrooms with neighborhood centers. And we have not received any feedback like that. And, again, our role is to present the information to them and certainly, again, highlight the importance. But we don't mandate. We don't force the kids to register. We don't force them to take a voter registration card and fill it out. But we provide that opportunity. And so I guess from that perspective, we make it as worry-free as possible.
Yeah.
Not to go deep into provide any reason for them not to want to participate in doing this.
Yeah, wow.
Great. That's exciting.
I really applaud you guys for working with Neighborhood Center. We love Neighborhood Centers, by the way. Yeah. They're such a great organization. But I applaud you guys. I do feel like, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, I feel like we should probably, because I hear you guys sort of tiptoeing, right? We tiptoe around this idea of nonpartisanship and making sure we're not doing, we don't want to threaten our schools. We know that our first job is getting these kids educated, right? But I wonder if I sort of feel like we need to be doing more, right? Since Texas falls so far behind.
But they
in terms
are doing so much more than the other schools.
They are.
And I appreciate them being safe and smart that. Yeah.
No, it's good. But I do feel like, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way, I almost wish that we could be doing more, right? That there could be more students across Texas registered to vote. I mean, I don't know if you guys can even talk to that.
So what I can tell you is that I think it goes back to the kind of experiences that we provide for kids. And one of the projects that we did last year, and again with neighborhood centers, was something called The Art of the Vote. And that was a very successful event that we had. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But the idea behind that was that we picked students that passed in high school to really, we trained them to become docents They work with the Museum of Fine Arts and got training on how to become docents. And so the idea was to bring politicians that were going out there, getting the word out and campaigning for their own agendas, but bring them all to the neighborhood centers and talk about this one form of art in terms of how it to be able to talk about what, how do we bring the community together, what can we do, what are some of the things that we can do to make our communities better. But for a moment there, the kids were a part of this, and they really got a chance to engage with a lot of politicians. And as a result, we had more of them want to be a part of this and, again, go back and say, I want to volunteer and keep volunteering for this. And we had our second event this year, and, again, it was a very successful event. And I think it's opportunities like that and experiences like that that help kids get more engaged and want to be willing to go out there and find information.
That sounds great. This is on a different topic and a very quick question. If you could just list two or three things as we look to 2019, we know the Texas legislature is going to be convening. What are the two or three big issues you think that they should be focusing on to support public education?
I think a big one's always going to be funding.
Is that one, two, and three? No.
That's number one, and there's lots of things out there that that people believe in, but that's a big one.
Yeah.
We get a lot of, and I can tell you I'm the end user in terms of I get all these legislations that get funneled down to us, and so some things are challenging, and people and districts are trying to figure out, okay, how do we make all this happen without the resources of the state or national government, whoever is making us do or saying you got to make sure that you do X, Y, and Z, So I think funding and finance is a hot topic, and so we're certainly all very hopeful that that is something that is addressed.
Well, I tell you that Mandy and I will be fighting for more funding for our public schools in this upcoming legislative session, so we're not going to stop believing for you guys, and you guys aren't going to stop believing for making sure that more students get educated and have that opportunity to register to vote, right, and to vote. So thank you guys very much for what you do.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
Thanks.
It.
That's the Principal Joe Saavedra, Dr. Steve Martin, Principal and Assistant Principal over Pasadena ISD. Thank you guys, and thanks for being on Growing Up in America today.
Thank you. Go Eagles.
Yeah.
Go Eagles.
Well, apparently the Eagles are the team there, right? So very good. Are we ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yeah.
Boom. Mandy, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Okay, that's right. So this is the time where
good
listeners
toys, bad toys.
Can call in and voice their opinion on good toys and bad toys. I know that I have some ideas right away as I've been shopping. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Call in and give us your opinion. I know there's people, Amazon, all the different shops in Houston.
There's one good shop. The one good shop, Blue Whale Toys.
That's right. Local business. Mm-hmm. Great ideas.
So on the line with us is our toy expert, Vanessa Wodehouse, my good buddy Vanessa. Vanessa, how you doing?
Hi, Bob. I'm great. How are you doing?
Very good. Mandy and I were excited to have you on the program.
Yeah, thank
I think
you.
It's been 2 years since you've been on, hasn't it?
I maybe longer. This is our fifth Christmas that we're getting ready for, and I can hardly believe it. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, time flies when you're playing with toys.
I owe you drinks or a lunch at some point, right? Because we haven't seen you in a long time.
Or me, you, yeah. But thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So what is, when you look at, and I know you do, you're not sort of your average toy store, right? I mean, you do sort of unusual and interesting toys. But what are the hot toys that you're seeing for this holiday season, Vanessa?
So for us, our specialty has always been to focus on classic toys. And the hot one for us this year is Light Bright. I'm sure y'all remember Light Bright.
Mm-hmm. Light Bright.
If they've changed it a little bit, so you plug it in, there's no light bulb that you can burn yourself on, but it's still basically the same toy, and we're selling tons of those, and ViewMaster as well. And
ViewMasters?
Still up there. Yeah, ViewMaster.
Now, so are they better than they used to be? Because I remember...
No, they're the same.
My brother had ViewMasters, and I just thought, Well, what's the big deal about the ViewMaster?
But like, everyone had the ViewMaster.
But
it is exactly the same.
That's awesome.
No modifications with the ViewMaster.
So, and you get my drift that there's just not much there, right? I mean, it's, but anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a good price point, I think. And, you know, for so many people, it's all about the nostalgia. Like this year, the big wheel came back, and we were so excited at Toy Fair in February to get the big wheel. So, if y'all remember playing, riding around your neighborhood, tearing it up on your big wheel, you can come to Big Blue Whale and get your kiddo one. So,
Mandy, did you have a big wheel?
Classic toys.
No, Mandy didn't have a big wheel. Did you have a big wheel
when I was younger?
Yeah, when you were a kid.
Yeah, I think I did. My kids now, they weren't that big when they were that age.
No. Have they just come back? Is that what, Vanessa, the big wheels?
Yeah.
I mean, they've. You know, I don't know what this is, the one from the 70s.
One
that, you know, I remember. That's probably 1975, 76, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
my
when you were a little
now
kid.
My kids cruising the neighborhood. But the big wheels are awesome.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, so, is in a sense, are some of the classic toys, it's kids that had those toys have grown up and are now parents and are like, oh, my kids need to get one of these because I had so much fun with them?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is. If you let kids loose in the store without any, you know, on their own with their own allowance money, they're going to pick things like Crazy Erin, Thinking Putty. That is still a hot, hot seller. We've got an item from Schilling that's called Neato, and it's basically this, you know, squishy ball. So they like the tactile toys. The sequined items that I'm sure you've seen, we've got stockings and purses and pillows, and those are really hot. LOL, we can't avoid that. the surprise factor is just kids love anything in a blind bag. So,
what is that? Tell me what that is.
Tell me. Oh, my goodness.
What is
okay,
that?
Let's pause real quick. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. We're asking listeners to call in and share their opinions on
good
toys.
Good or bad toys. Your favorite good or bad
but
toys.
But the surprise fact, what did you call it?
LOL.
Well, there's the LOL line, which is a line of dolls, and they have accessories and pets. And so when you buy this plastic container, it has X number of basically surprises in it. So I think what's so fun is not necessarily what you end up taking out. Although, you know, if your kiddos are into, you know, creative play and they like to pretend play and they like playing with little dolls, and they can have a blast for a long time. So, but I think what's exciting about it is they don't know what's in there, right?
That is
there a
boy's exciting
surprise toy that you know of?
My younger one, and so I'll just go out there and say it. He's into this, like, Ryan's World or whatever. He's this YouTube thing, right? But it is terrible. So I'm giving big thumbs down to letting
Ryan's
your
World
kids watch Ryan's World. Now, all they're doing is watching someone play with a toy, but it's the surprise factor. It's always like digging into a box. What's going to come out? What am I going to be able to do with this? But it's like one after another, and now it's like this line. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. But so I just jumped on the thought, though, because I really think it's the surprise factor, right? And so now even when I'm looking for Christmas, you're like, okay, am I going to spend this X amount of money not knowing what I'm going to get out of it?
Right.
Hey, Vanessa, is there a gift, because I'm out of it, right? I'm not buying for any young kids right now. And so is there a gift this year that is like this very hot, hard to find, that they're all bought out already, and so people are selling them online? Is there a gift like that this year?
You know what's hilarious? I have missed the hot toy every year that I've been in business, and I keep thinking, one year I'm going to get it right. But I don't know that there is. I haven't heard that there's one that's, people were thinking it was going to be the LOL bigger surprise, which we have at the store, but they haven't run out yet.
Mm.
So it could be that, you know, next week it might be a hard to find item, but right now it's not. So I haven't heard, you know, the word on the street about what that, you know, there's no Cabbage Patch doll that's popping up right now that people are going to be trampling over each other for.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't know. And, you know, another huge trend that continues, which is mind-boggling a little bit to me, is the sloth, llama. Those are the two hot animals this year.
Anything, I know.
What is that?
A llama?
A sloth or a llama.
A sloth or a llama.
Wow.
I'm not in that.
Why is the sloth or llama? Why are they big?
I don't know. I mean, it's every few years it seems to sort of change. I think when I first opened, it was foxes. That was kind of the big hot animal. And now here we are, 2018, and it's the sloth and the llama.
So do you have any thumbs down for any toys that you think aren't worth the hype? Is there a thumbs down out there? Are you allowed to do that, Vanessa?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, we don't sell a lot of, the most, I've said before, the most electronically advanced game we have is Simon. I mean, we don't have video games. I like toys that, you know, when a customer comes in and asks for my advice, I try to steer them towards something that the kid can play with for a long time and then hopefully pass down so it just doesn't end up in a landfill.
Quality toys,
so,
you're talking.
Yeah, so I like toys that are going to last, and that's what we try to stock at Big Blue Whale and all my fellow independent toy stores. And Houston's so awesome because every neighborhood has a great independent toy store. So no one needs to get on Amazon. Just Google your local toy shop, and you know, for the most part, we carry a lot of similar things, and we all feel the same way. We're all passionate about finding great toys for kids.
Wow. That's awesome. Mandy, do you have any thumbs up or thumbs down on particular toys?
One big thumbs up that I'm excited about is I don't know, it's like Illustrator, or I don't remember what it's called, but essentially it's a box with a bunch of pages and pens and whatever that you buy, and it was $20, right? Mm. And then you have the kids go in there and draw their pictures and write a story.
Yeah.
And then you mail it back in and it's published. And it's a
hard
copy.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. So I got my kids that, and then I got all the nieces and nephews. And so it's a good gift because it's not like, oh, purchase this, and then the parents will then do another purchase to go get it published. It's all comes in one.
It's all in one.
Which is nice.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's a wonderful company.
Yeah, very good. Wow. And I don't know if I have any, you know, thumbs up. I still like Lincoln Logs. I don't know.
We got them, Bob. We have
them. We got some logs. Yeah. Now, one other thing.
I don't like stepping on them in the middle of the night. I think that's happened to me.
So, Vanessa, I don't know if y'all have this or not, but it was extremely hard for me to find. Extremely, extremely hard. And it's like the RC flying ball, so it's a little bit different than what Vanessa was saying, but it's a ball that like glows, but it has spinners, and so it flies, and the reason it doesn't touch the ground is because of your hand, so it goes like off of motion.
We have something like that. Ours looks like basically a smiley face emoji.
Uh-huh.
And we've actually carried them for 5 years and get them from the same company. It doesn't light up, but it's a ball shape. And it moves because, you know, your hand is sort of guiding it. The only thing is you can't take it outside.
Because then it'll be like, see you later. But I thought it would be a good gift that they can play by themselves, right? Just juggling it. Or if you're like, hey, pass it to me, or with their friends. So it's an independent and interactive game.
Well, I can't wait to see that. That sounds really fun. I've not seen one of those. I look forward to little Kyler or Mason coming into the office with those, Mandy.
Beware.
So that might be a different thing than racing them down the hallway like I like to do.
Probably safer for everyone.
Yeah, very good. Vanessa Wodehouse is over at the Big Blue Whale in the Heights. It's my favorite independent toy store in pretty much in Texas, Vanessa, I think, right?
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, thanks. So. Very good. Hey, thanks for being on the program, Vanessa.
You are welcome.
Happy holidays.
Have a wonderful holiday season.
Yeah,
you too.
And you too. And talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. Have you done all your holiday shopping, Mandy?
Not all of it, but
still a
majority.
Little bit more to do.
Yeah.
You know who I have a hard time buying for? My wife.
Yeah, I don't have that one down either yet.
Yeah, you? Yeah,
no.
It's the same sort of thing, right? It's like, how do we do this for our spouses? It's a tough deal.
And that's when I'm just like, it's about the you were thought of, because everyone is adult. It stresses me out, actually.
Every year we say we're going to not buy gifts, and then this year I brought it up. I think I brought it up about a month ago, and she goes, it's too late. I already bought your gift. Like, what?
Yeah, maybe it's something small. That's great.
No, asked her for a price limit, and it didn't seem like it was a low price limit. So that's a first world problem. That's a first world problem, though, right? So,
Well, they say it's kind of frightening how this younger generation swings. You know, it's more than just some new sensation. Well, the kid is into losing sleep, and he don't come home for half a week.
I know know this is Van Halen, but I don't know which song that is. But Brian Green is that's the theme song for Brian Green from the Houston Food Bank. Our good buddy Brian. Brian, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. That's "And the Cradle Will Rock."
Perfect for the Growing Up in America radio program, right?
Raising our children upright.
Happy Monday, Brian.
Happy Monday.
So, Brian, as we get into the holiday season, people often talk about hunger and food. And what are you seeing this year out there? Are people a little bit nervous in the public sector about feeding and hunger and food security right now?
Well, some of the biggest things we're concerned about now are what's happening in government.
Yeah,
so
tell us about that.
So we've been paying a lot of attention to the Farm Bill and what will happen with SNAP. But there's something going on right now. Today is the last day for people to have impact on this. And that is the administration has proposed a very significant change in how public charge is interpreted. Now, you guys know this, but a lot of listeners may not know this. So Congress writes laws, and the president signed the bill. But once you have the law, the enabling legislation, generally speaking, the administrations have fairly wide latitude in the regulations that they write for the interpretation and enforcement of that. And so we've historically had a public charge law that, if somebody is basically a ward of the state, they're an overall a burden and they're trying to become a citizen, apply for permanent status, or even legal residence, they can be denied because they're basically going to cost the taxpayers net. So we've had this for years, and there's not, there's concern about it, but people get the point. We're here for people to be contributors, and if they need help, they need help. Well, the administration has proposed a very significant change in that determination, which historically has been if the person, the household, is, 51% plus or more of their income is basically from benefits, then they could be considered a public charge and therefore denied the ability to stay here. What the administration is proposing is that the change to, when you look at the interpretation, even receiving SNAP benefits or Medicaid assistance, to help if there's an illness, well, you can thus be defined as a public charge and thrown out, denied permanent residence status, et cetera.
What do we think is really going to happen with this, Brian? Do we think that, is it really just a threat on the part of our administration to try to get, to try to talk about undocumented immigrants?
Scare tactic?
A scare tactic? Or do we really think that this could happen where, because it seems so irrational and so, so ill-advised, though I have to say many policies that have passed recently are ill-advised and irrational.
And to that I would say, beware of the tyranny of or. I do not think it is either or. We certainly notice, we've seen an impact already. Virtually all of our partners who are serving people in the Hispanic community have seen a significant uptick in fear. So there's the reality of this, and then there's the fear. Like, even fear, and this is we've seen a huge impact of this. Even a family, if they need just food assistance, they do not want to give their name for fear that they took food assistance from a church once. And this is where we are right now. So there very much is fear. Everybody is seeing this in terms of how many people will come to when we're having a festival or something like that. And then there is also, the administration has the ability to make this interpretation as they choose.
Well, and I think this is, so your point is that people need to speak up, right, and voice their opinion on this, because in the conversations that I've had with public officials, that wasn't the intent. However, because it's touching on immigration and all this other stuff, they're they're hesitant to get involved in those conversations, and so are just backing out of it. So this really relies on the general public to provide comments and speak up so that this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And today is the deadline. They are legally required to have a public comment period. Today, December 10th, is the end of that public comment period. For more information, you can go to houstonfoodbank.org/advocate. And we've got the details as well as to how to send in your comment. Please do so today.
Great. Will do.
Brian, in regards to child hunger in our area around the holiday time, what are we looking at and how can people help?
Well, so there, anytime school's not in session, there's a problem. So weekends are within the week. That's the worst time of the week.
Yeah.
Christmas break, yes, that is a stress time because for families who are basically on the margin, those extra two meals a day for their kids, that is a big deal. So you probably have a church pantry in your neighborhood. Make sure that they're doing well. We're always looking for volunteers at the food bank. We get these donations that we pursue all around the country of products that will require work. And most of what enables us to do that is actually, you know, people donating their time. You know, one of the biggest things is, you know, just reach out to somebody that you know that, you know, that maybe they're struggling and just, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Very good.
And, one of the things that I often talk about is how you talk about how summer, because kids are not in school, is a much more intense time of child food insecurity, child hunger than the winter. But when school is out of session, right, that's the time we need to pay attention to these, you know, any families that we know. Poorer families, you know, whenever these kids are not in school, including the holidays, you know, that's when a little bit of extra help always helps.
And this is a great time of year also, though, for families to get involved with their kids and teaching them how to volunteer. And I know that the Houston Food Bank accommodates so many people.
They do a good job with that.
It's a great thing. So, Brian.
Even the youngsters. 6 years old can come volunteer with their parents.
Yep.
And you make it fun, right? Don't you, Brian? I mean, it's a fun thing for a family to go out there.
Yeah, I find that, like, my own kids, they're just thrilled to do it. This is a big adventure with me.
But it's true.
Because kids don't get to do that.
Kids like to give back.
Your boys makes them feel good. Yeah, yeah.
So looking forward, though, to the next legislative session, what are some key issues that you will be focusing on around hunger as the legislature convenes?
Well, we're looking definitely to try and expand the produce acquisition. Texas is a state that is a huge produce generator, and the reality of that produce is that much of it does not make it to the store. And we are hoping that the legislature will get behind supporting more of this, what we call surplus ag grant, to channel more of this fresh produce we can to serve the kids in the state. That's a big one that we're going to be focused on this year. As well as, quite frankly, as we are in every legislative session, is defensive mode.
Say that again, the last thing again, Brian?
Defensive mode.
Defensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there are always just a raft of bills to basically punitive bills for lower-income families that we have to fight off, and you're well aware of those.
Do you think... are you getting word from other people around food banks around the state, you know, because of... the little blue wave that happened in Texas. I mean, we still have a Republican legislature, but a lot of these suburban Republicans that were sort of extreme, you know, were defeated, and we maybe have a little bit of a moderating influence. Do you feel like that's going to have an impact, Brian?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
I'm not
right
for that. I do know Speaker Strauss, a lot of Speaker Strauss. Very worried about what the implications of that's going to be. He was definitely a moderating influence.
Yeah.
And as you know, I mean, just the reality of how politics have been these past several years now is the greatest safety for a legislator is often retreating to their base rather than reaching out across. So I don't know how this will play out.
Yeah, very good.
All right. So, final four at 54. Here's some questions for our listeners to get to know you a bit better. First question, what was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
I don't think we've ever asked you these questions,
I want to change it. What was your favorite Christmas present as a kid?
Oh, favorite Christmas present, Brian?
You know, I don't know if I got this for Christmas or whatever, but I think my favorite toy was the game Stratego. I absolutely love that little strategy game.
Wow, fun. Yeah. Did you ever play Stratego?
Old school. Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's been like forever.
That's old school. So old, I don't remember it.
Yeah. And what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Well, many things. One of the earliest things, certainly when I was a young child, I wanted to be a game warden in Kenya. It never occurred to me that I would be a food banker. I can tell you that.
Game warden.
I love that. The game warden. That's really good. In Kenya, specifically in Kenya, too.
Well, the movie Born Free is what inspired me.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And the next question is, I'm sure you have bought your favorite children many books. What's the favorite book that you have bought them?
Right now we are reading the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Nice.
We did The Hobbit, and then we watched the three Hobbit movies. And now we're still on the first book, The Fellowship of the Ring, and they are absolutely loving it.
And around the holiday season, Brian, what's the edible delicacy that you most look forward to, either during the holiday season or during the during holiday dinners?
Well, I do like, I spent 13 years in New Orleans. They did not do what I consider to be a traditional Thanksgiving, where no mashed potatoes. They had rice, the Neroletons, and not real dressing, but the oyster dressing. So I take the
all of that stuff is very good.
Fried turkey, but then add this very traditional mashed potatoes, deviled eggs, stuffing, just that classic Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner.
Wow, yeah. Deviled eggs. I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never met a deviled egg I didn't like.
You would love mine. I call them demon eggs. I use Tabasco and Tony Sazeri, and so they have a ton of kids.
Wow. I have to say, you know, growing up in Puerto Rico, speaking of favorite holiday delicacies, they had a little drink called Coquito, which is basically alcoholic coconut drink. And so I was a kid, I didn't really have it. But when I moved to the States, they had this thing called eggnog. And I thought, that sounds horrible. You know, this egg drink, I'm not going to drink this. And I was a senior in high school, and I was working in supermarkets and food world. I was working in the food world. And someone said, Sanborn, have you tried this eggnog? And I'm like, no, I don't think I want to try it. Just give it a try. And I tasted it, and it tasted like this delicious milkshake. And every night as I would close up, you know, clean up and close up the store, there'd always be a little carton of eggnog that the date had expired that day. You know, we're going to throw it out. And I'd ride my bicycle home with a quart of eggnog.
Oh, my goodness.
And I would drink like half of the quart. I couldn't drink the whole thing. No. It's too rich. But about half a quart of eggnog. And I think that was the road where Skinny Bob started turning. Right then, I think it started turning. It's where it became a difference in my life. So it's interesting, the little holiday things that we have. Brian Green is over at the food bank. He's our good buddy. Hey, Brian, keep up the good work. And thanks for being on the program. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Y'all have a wonderful new year.
All right, you too.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Little eggnog. Got to get a little eggnog.
So
I like
bad
to
for
do
you.
The fresh fresh nutmeg. I have a little grater in these fresh
nutmegs.
You
put a little something-something in it, though? That's good.
You always need to put a little something-something, and that's why I'm talking about the nutmeg. A little nutmeg in there to make it good. Hey, that's it for our program. Thank you to everyone. Mandy, thank you. Laura, thank you. We'll see you next time here on Pacifica Radio.